Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Destabilize the conference like you're like United States messing with Ecuadorian politics.
Pete Thamel.
So he is not a factor to start in game one. That is completely unrealistic.
With SI's Pat Forty.
You're trying to sell this game against Nebraska like it's a big deal. Nebraska sucks. So, sorry.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
Hi, plenty going on in the world. College football. Pat and I can't wait to get back. Get down to some important stuff.
To be gone when all hell has been breaking loose. I mean, we're busy enough that we can kind of work through it, but there is some definite FOMO to see college football just absolutely turning itself inside out while we are, you know, on a bus to our 13th venue of the Olympics.
Forget a bus. I was texting with like an assistant commissioner somewhere yesterday, literally while Simone Biles was about to get back on the beam. Priorities. And by priorities, I mean, Simone, take a break. I got stuff to do over here.
Dan is so rattled right now. He didn't even say, welcome to the pod.
Welcome to the pod.
I'm rattled.
All sorts of stuff's going back at home. You want to know my biggest concern coming back to the United States after 3 weeks? My lawn. I've been getting pictures of the guy's done a good job. His kid's done a good job, it looks like. But someone else mowing your lawn, I know a lot of people hire that job out. For me, it's just like no, that's my lawn. It's like someone else wearing your pants. Like, no.
I watch someone else mow my lawn every week. I enjoy it.
Yeah. I had this conversation with Brett Favre once randomly. Name drop. He was very upset when he was in Minnesota. Someone else got to mow his lawn. And he wasn't going to be right. And I know exactly how he feels. It's not really I'm struggling out there. Where's the bad boy mower bowl coming?
Let control go, Dan. Sometimes you got to let others do their thing.
I have. I'm just, what's the first thing you do when you get home? Like, mow my lawn, even though it might not need mowing.
I'd probably take a nap.
Mine is going to be to eat some grilled meat. I can guarantee you that.
Well, that would be good too.
And have a big salad.
Wow. That'd be good. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting Sierra Nevada, not an arugula and spinach combo.
Well, yes, Sierra Nevada would be very nice. But give me like some grilled chicken wings or a steak, and then a real salad. This is the micro salad I'm holding up right now that we get for breakfast every day. Breakfast tends to be like cold piece of chicken, maybe sometimes a cold piece of pizza, and a micro salad.
Salad doesn't seem to be a thing.
A lot of bread.
A lot of rice, there's some tremendous like shrimp and things and some good food here, no question.
I think when Pat returns, he has to find our faithful podcast listener who Brooke Forty had the misfortune of sitting next to on her flight. Where was it, Pat?
Yeah, from Los Angeles to Chicago. Yeah, Brooke flew Tokyo to L.A. This was, I don't know whether it was yesterday, Tokyo, I've lost track of the days. And then L.A. to Chicago, Chicago to Louisville. And she texted me that she is on a flight next to a huge fan of the podcast. So
yes,
whoever that is out there, if you're a listener, email me, hit me up on Twitter, something. Let's hear about it.
You left out the best detail.
A huge fan of the podcast who knew an uncomfortable amount about your family.
Yes.
Poor Brooke.
I think it was an alarming amount.
So poor Brooke wins a medal, the pinnacle of a long professional grind. And on her flight home, she has to sit next to a guy on a plane who knows about like Pat's beer preference, Dan's lawn, my yoga. I was so demoralized for Brooke. Like, really? This is the one person you have to sit next to is someone who listens to our podcast?
Once you get out of this little Olympic bubble, that old medal don't mean a whole lot.
That's right.
People are much more concerned about chicken wars.
She was probably getting interrogated about realignment, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the Olympic athlete that doesn't want to do doesn't want to talk to the media now, and then they'll have like a PR person like, we'll call you in like 2 weeks after the Olympics. Like,
yeah, good luck.
For what? I'm sorry. Like, if you're not Simone Biles or like Katie Ledecky, I'm just like, love you. Great job, people. Great job. But no one's reading about this. Let's start with the news. Then we're going to get to this absolutely just classic Texas Senate hearing that we just cannot. I just thank you, Texas senators.
Yeah.
Thank you for holding. We always make fun of the grandstanding senators. Did anyone ask about transgender athletes at this thing and try to blame Bob Bolesby for that? Grandstanding senators are the best, but they came through for us. So we're going to get through to that. But first, Max Olson, our friend at The Athletic, reporting that the Big 12 and the Pac-12 are having a meeting. Bob Bolesby and George Klyavkov. I don't know what this meeting could be. They're talking, could there be a merger? Could there be a scheduling alliance? Certainly, Bolesby's doing his job. People were saying I was very sympathetic to Bob Bolesby, and I am, but you should have listened to the last 250 podcasts of my feelings on Bob Bolesby. But anyway, in this one, what is the latest, Pete? You're stateside on this meeting that I don't understand. I mean, you got to have the meeting, but I don't see where this is going.
In the grand scheme of everything, it's certainly a good scoop by The Athletic. So hat tip to our friend Max, but this is just a mutually beneficial press release, basically, right? Bob Bolesby has a couple boards at some of these schools that you could imagine have a little bit of hair trigger tempers, right? So they thought Bob Bolesby got caught flat-footed. So now Bob Bolesby has to be on the aggressive a little bit. So the ESPN letter shows Bob's on the aggressive. Flying out to the West Coast to meet with George shows he's being aggressive. George, God bless him, doesn't know what he doesn't know yet. So of course he'll take a meeting with Bob Bolesby, right? And then it looks like George is open to new ideas. Bob looks like he's doing the right thing for his eight by chatting up George about a potential scheduling alignment. Nothing is imminent, not even close to the ballpark of imminent. But I just think this and the fact that it got leaked, honestly, before it happened, just is a little bit of like, oh, look at Bob getting out there and getting after it. So I still pretty firmly believe that the Pac-12 doesn't have any interest in these Big 12 schools. But I don't know if George has come to that conclusion yet because he doesn't know. So I don't see the benefit of this. If you are, look, you have to look at these decisions going forward, not like what's best for the Pac-12. You have to say what's best for USC. Because who's really controlling this? USC. The big brands are controlling this. So does USC want to be affiliated with Texas Tech and Baylor and Oklahoma State? No, of course not. They're in the LA media market. They have little to no interest in, they can go into Texas just fine. Now, Cal or Washington State may have a little bit of a hard time getting into Texas. So the footprint isn't of much interest. The TV sets aren't of much interest. Nothing. This will only be a footnote, but I applaud both for giving us some chum for our pod today. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where George's head is going forward, but I don't really think it's going to be anywhere near this.
And by getting into Texas, I mean in recruiting.
Yes, correct. In recruiting and
or scheduling.
Yeah, and maybe students, that kind of stuff. The Pac-12 thinks about that a little more than maybe the Big 12 would, like just some of the bigger university ideals of it all. I mean, Stanford, like the way the Pac-12 stuck up their nose at Boise during the last round of realignment was a good tell into, you know, academically where you need to be. And Boise used to be a junior college. It's not a knock on Boise. It's grown up, and it's a great school in a great growing market, by the way. But they're not ranked in the neighborhood of Stanford, Cal, UCLA, et cetera. And it in really, USC, since the Pete Carroll era, has rocketed up those academic rankings too. Just ask Aunt Becky, right? So the notion of this happening is not particularly real, but they went out and took a meeting. So that was nice.
I'll say this while Dan and I are both drinking out of our juice boxes here, like, you know, 8-year-olds. mine is orange. What's yours? You got?
I got grape.
Great.
Dole grape.
Okay.
I also have these. This is what I want, a coffee. I have this. This is a Nescafe powdered coffee.
Oh.
And you get one, pour one in, and then you heat up the hot water in your kettle. I have a kettle.
Right. Oh, yeah, I got a kettle. Kettle's been good.
And Kettle is great. And then, but I go down there and I keep asking for like 20 of these things. And the ladies at the front desk are horrified.
Do they think you're snorting them?
I don't know what they're thinking. I'm not saying I'm not, by the way. All right, go ahead.
So anyway, yeah, back to the topic at hand. No, I don't think you want to be in anything like any sort of a formal affiliation with those schools, but I could see teasing it out, a scheduling alliance possibly being helpful for the Pac-12, you know, just because you've got to play some other teams, right? You've got your 9-game conference schedule, but if you can play above the mean, you know, quote unquote non-power, I mean, I guess there's still Power 5 school. I mean, playing Iowa State and Baylor helps you theoretically from a strength of schedule standpoint. And certainly it would help Iowa State and Baylor to play teams from the Pac-12 if you can't schedule other people. So if you're looking for someone to schedule and say you're supremely pissed at the SEC and don't want to play them, you can continue to play Big Ten teams, which the Pac-12 does on fairly rare regular occasion. Washington's playing Michigan this year. Ohio State's playing Oregon. There's usually some games there. Stanford plays Northwestern, et cetera. But working some of these schools in here and increasing your strength of schedule, which has been a concern for the Pac-12 because their own league just isn't that good, I think it might be, you know, prudent to look at. No, I would not want to, like, join a conference if I'm one of the California schools with some of the flotsam and jetsam from the Big 12. But scheduling with them, yeah, I might do it.
Co-opting my terms now, Pat?
Yeah. What that?
It's a good term.
Flotsam and jetsam. Yeah. I got to tell you, I just don't understand the concept of the scheduling alliance at all. First off, USC and Oregon already go and just play whoever the hell they want. Everybody wants to play those guys. Almost everyone wants to play Cal. Cal is one of those great games because it sounds good. We're playing California, right? Even if you go home and home, you're probably going to win. I was trying to look at the middle pack of like who's getting games. Oregon's actually, no, they're playing Texas Tech. They're not middle. Oregon State has a Purdue series and a Texas Tech series coming up. Not bad. They also are going to have a Fresno State game, like 2025. Let me look at Washington State. I just don't think, like, is it that hard for the Pac-12 teams to go schedule a game?
Well, no, but you, for the same reason you're looking at why teams want to schedule the Pac-12 is you're getting a decent name that you can beat, theoretically.
Oh, I get it if you're the Big 12.
But I get it if you're the Pac-12. You know? I mean,
yeah, but I guess. I mean, let's see. Washington State's at Wisconsin. Like, if I would do this with the Big 10 before I do with the Big 12. But even then, like, I don't think if I'm the Pac-12, let's take, all right, 2022 Washington State football schedule. They play Idaho at home. They're at Wisconsin. They play Colorado State at home.
Can't beat Wisconsin.
Well, they can't. So, they could schedule. Let's see what 2025 is. Well, they got Idaho and San Diego. I guess they're looking for a game in 2025, 2024. I mean, this is the bottom of your league. Yeah, they got nobody scheduled. Step it up, Wazoo. Yeah, they got the Wisconsin home. And I don't know. I don't.
But that's
like linking yourself in, so you're playing Kansas State. Like, is it that hard to get that game? You got to have your now. You're basically trying to prop up the bottom of your league, and then you're telling USC that you're going to get looped in somehow.
Well,
unless you come up with a scheduling alliance that doesn't include the four good teams in the league.
Yeah, right. No, it doesn't do a lot of good for USC. And to Pete's point, USC matters more than everyone else, and Oregon, and you know the best schools matter the most. Boy, have we learned that in the last few weeks. But I still think if you're USC, yes, all right, so you still schedule Notre Dame. And if you want to schedule one other high profile game too, but then if you're in a rotation where you're getting one Big 12 team a year that you could beat, and it's actually going to help your strength of schedule.
I don't know. They never play one double A's. So 2023,
yeah,
they
canceled that Davis game, right?
Right.
Yeah. They never play one double A's at USC or UCLA. They have Nevada at Notre Dame, BYU. That's 2023, 2022. Our friends at fbschedules.com. This site is phenomenal.
Oh, that's a great site. Yep.
Great site.
Spent a lot of time on
Rice, Fresno, Notre Dame. This is not the Pete Carroll Trojans, I'll tell you that.
They played Fresno, though, back in the day.
Yeah, no, they did. That was where Reggie Bush had the behind the back
There's an Ole Miss schedule series, USC Ole Miss and Notre Dame. So, like, all right, let's take this. USC 2026, schedule's done. Fresno, at Ole Miss, Notre Dame. That's your three non-cons. You know, just to throw in a Baylor or something. Like, what's the difference between
girls go to the Grove? Well, they play nine, Dan, so they can't throw one in.
Right, those just three. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But, like, who are you replacing there?
I just feel like if you're going to play nine, there's no real room for a scheduling alliance. I think the sort of merger concept thought is you merge the rights as much as anything else, and then you come bigger, and you maybe have more muscle that way. Or can we get creative? And again, I don't have any sense. I haven't talked to, like, in detail to any TV executives about what some kind of merge conference could look like. I know we've talked about it a few times on the podcast. I don't have a holistic understanding of it, essentially because it's never happened. But could you have it where
go to market together?
Five schools. I'm just going to throw something out there from what we learned in COVID. Could five schools have a hole in the back end of their schedule in each league and they play each, you know, the top two play each other for playoff positioning? I don't know. Like, could you bracket buster, mix and match some of your schools every year? Is there something like that where you're going to guarantee three games? So you tell Washington State, Oregon, and Arizona State to leave a hole at the back of their schedule, and then you tell, you know, Baylor, Iowa State, and TCU, and then the best ones match up, or you match up you put together the best matchups to maximize the postseason. I don't know. Like, I feel like we're not that far from that in some way, but again, that's not like a source told me that or anything. I'm kind of making that up, but like, how would these work? Nobody's really given me a clear vision of that yet, but it's intriguing. But I don't think it's forced. I think it's more like power in numbers, because ultimately this whole Premier League thing, like, it comes down to like owning all the rights, dominating all the rights, and then leveraging that into the biggest TV deal possible. And so I guess it would be what, 20 is better than 12, right? Or 20 is better than 8.
Yeah, like, I mean, yes, to Dan's point, if you're going to go to market as a combined entity, that might be the best play. I mean, that might be the best reason to enter into any sort of agreement between these two conferences. I think they've got to be looking out for each other to a degree, because we know that the two biggest dogs aren't, the Big Ten and the SEC. So, and I think the ACC probably feels like, if need be, they can get by as is. The Pac-12 and Big 12, if I'm George Kliakoff, I happily take the meeting. And if I'm Bob Bowlesby, even if it's just, hey, look at me, I'm busy out here trying to save us, I certainly take the meeting.
I want to know where the meeting is. This is going to tell us a lot about Kliakoff, because he's going to have, is it just going to be like in the conference room with some coffees and Danish? Or are we going Larry Scott, like renting out a wine, like a vineyard in Sonoma, or like a yacht parked off of San Francisco Bay?
Yeah.
You know, and he's just sitting there, like big money, like that Wolf of Wall Street yacht where he makes the FBI guys, you want the lobsters? Take them home.
Kliakoff's a Vegas guy.
So. Yeah, convicted in Vegas.
Don't think it just could be a, hey, Bob, you look like you need a drink.
I saw you
in that Texas Senate hearing yesterday, Bob. Like, belly up. Let's get some Tito's and soda.
Are you saying it's an experiment rhino in Las Vegas? Oh. Is that
what I'm not saying that, Sully. I'm not saying that.
It's going to get trashed at the experiment rhino. Dana White's going to take him to the back alley, and all of a sudden, like, the whole league is just going to be, they just take it over. We own it now. We made you an offer you can't refuse.
The idea of Bob Bowlesby at the Spearmint Rhino is a precious one.
All right. Well, let's get to some real debauchery. Sully, play me a clip from this. The Texas Senate called a meeting. They had a meeting, which is what the senators do. They get together. They have meetings. They called in the president of the University of Texas and Bob Bowlesby and anyone else there to testify?
Oh, a lot of people. It was basically allowing Baylor, TCU, and Tech to air their grievances and allow their local Texas congressional representatives to grandstand ridiculously and hilariously. In fact, if the three of us had tried to conjure a political satire, I don't think we could have come up with a better thing than unfolded in Texas yesterday.
could not have been more excited. Again, another thing, I was trying to watch clips of this while supposedly covering the Olympics. Yeah. This is way better. Sully, play me a clip.
But what's your athletic budget?
It's over $200 million. It's probably $220, $225 in that range.
Where does that put you in the U.S.?
Depending on how you count, probably first.
And that's without a winning football team of late.
It's in spite of our football team. We've been winning, just not like we like to win.
3-7 against the Horned Frogs. Maybe your fan base would rather lose to Alabama than TCU. So.
Just phenomenal. I mean, I give that
legendary
senator great credit for her delivery. I mean, that's, you want to just stab it in there, you know, in slow, understated tones, measured, but oh, the acid. Incredible.
But the dead and deadpan.
Yeah.
2-7 against TCU.
She was wrong too. That's the best part.
Fabulous delivery. Fabulous job. This woman's got a future in politics. Absolutely phenomenal. Everything about the clip. So where did that rank you? I mean, again, you know, he's dying to be like, goddamn number one with Texas. What do you think? He's like, I don't know. Depends how you look at it. Probably number one. Yeah. 200, 225, $25 million floating around. I don't even know. We're Texas. We just lost in the seat cushions. Baylor and those places, $25 million, man. Not to us, though. So he's totally being an ass. And then she just stabs him. It's great. Oh,
yeah. I mean,
Alabama than TCU. They would rather lose to Alabama than TCU. That's the problem.
Oh, that
you're
is
tired of losing to TCU.
100% yeah. The problem.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes,
we are so mortified that we can't beat all the little brothers that we have looked down our nose at for decades. That by God, we're out of here.
Even with name, image, and likeness coming, yeah. You got $25 million just apparently floating around. We don't even know.
I think they should send her to do Gary Patterson's like Monday press briefing every week, or at least like once, like before the Stephen F. Austin game or whatever. Just send her there. This could be way more memorable than anything Gary says, any cliche he spits out. So
if they make a Big Ten network, she needs to have her own host. She's like the future Paul Feinbaum of the Plains. All right, play me another one, Sully.
I think we do have a vested interest in monitoring activities that impact us statewide, and arguably you can't deny the fact that football and changes thereof, unfortunately, whether I agree or not, that we probably put way too much emphasis on it, but the fact that we do, that's the rules of the day, impacts us. And I think that I said it earlier, there's going to be some proposals in legislation that I'm sure you guys are not going to find overwhelming, but you can't be the flagship, you can't carry the Texas name. And you know, if you're as big and great as you think you are, you should have made the Big 12 equal or better than the SEC, and you didn't do it. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of feel sorry for the SEC. Cousin Eddie's coming home, and he don't leave till he's wrecked the whole house. And I don't quite think they understand where they think you're coming in at. I know where they think they're at. So that's a different topic. They made their bed, they'll lie in it. But I really think as a state, I'm very disappointed about how this has transpired. I'm, as a legislature and a policy deal goes, I'm really disappointed that this wasn't even a conversation. And I understand proprietary stuff, but don't you think we might have should have known?
Listening to politicians talk about how there should be better people getting along. All right, enough of them.
Well, right.
Shit or full. Cousin Eddie.
What a drop there. That is phenomenal.
You know, other people wrote these for these deadpan senators, by the way.
I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. Cousin Eddie is from Kansas, by the way. And Griswolds are from Chicago, yeah. Suburbs of Chicago. So the ultimate insult of someone from Texas is saying you're from Kansas, I believe. It's not even Oklahoma.
You have $250 million a year, and you're eating Hamburger Helper by itself.
I don't know why they call it Hamburger Helper. It tastes so good all on its own, right? It's just fine. All right, we got this one. We don't have audio, but Baylor AD Mac Rhodes.
Oh.
Dusty Rhodes from the top rope. Many of my colleagues around the country believe that the University of Texas created this situation because they think so highly of themselves. My humble opinion, of course not humble at all, I completely disagree. I think it's because they felt too little of themselves. Mac Rhodes pouring red meat to the Waco fans. More popular than the Joanna and Chip Gaines right now.
I saw that quote, and the first thing that flashed through my mind, I don't know whether Texas is at Baylor this year or Baylor's at Texas, but I want to see him and Chris Del Conte meeting in the football press box when that game happens, because that's going to be chilly, and that's going to be the way this – I mean – The interactions between these folks at the administrative and at the coaching level, and certainly at the fan level, is going to be icy, contentious, awkward as hell for as long as this thing goes on. And, you know, everybody's saying now that they got to stay till 2025, and we'll see. I firmly believe that will not happen. But the longer it goes on, the more we're just going to have stuff like this. And then all of the attendant, I can't wait the first time Oklahoma or Texas gets a questionable penalty. Oh, the Big 12's out to screw us because we're leaving. Yeah, it's going to be
horns down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some interesting thought in four more years of petty, right? Because this is already pretty petty. I mean, this is like, this is high level, let's dedicate a whole podcast to it, petty, right? If we get four more years of this, Stuart Mandel had a great tweet yesterday, our friend from The Athletic. He just tweeted four more years from one of the clips, because it was just like, all right, here we go. Here we go. Let's go. Think about this when you want to dive into the petty. Chris Del Conte, Texas Athletic Director, is, I believe, the godfather of one of Jeremiah Donati, the TCU Athletic Director's children.
Mm.
Kirby Hocutt, Athletic Director at Texas Tech. His mentor, longtime friend, is none other than Joe Castiglione, the athletic director at Oklahoma. Like, this move is literally like ripping apart essentially like families, people who are really close, have spent years working together. Del Conte built TCU.
Yeah.
Well, Gary Patterson built them, but Del Conte sold TCU up to this moment, right? Yeah. They were in the Mountain West. Yep. Remember, he put him in the Big East for 20 minutes? Before moving him over. And now Del Conte is just literally kicking them back in the curve. So there's some fascinating dynamics, and there will be a lot of acid, which, quite frankly, will be really good for the podcast.
All for it. This is what we need. There, usually these guys are too nice to each other. And credit to Mac Rhodes for jumping on the fighting for his school, because too often a guy like Mac Rhodes sits there and says, "Well, Baylor's a sinking ship, and I want to get to the SEC."
Right,
and so. Del Conte, I don't need Del Conte and these guys, or anybody blocking me if all of a sudden I get the job at, wherever, Kentucky. And I want to, because this, so instead of this just being, there's no congeniality here. This is like, this is what it should be. And it's like, I got to stand up for my guys. This is just, it's just a one line. It's an insult. It's petty. There ain't, you know, everything's bigger in Texas, including the petty. But good for him, because at least you sit there and go, all right, this guy actually is fighting for me, opposed to I'm fighting for my career, which is one of the biggest problems in college sports. We talk about no one is in control. Yeah. They're all bought off. They're all bought off because they never stay. And they bought off by a search committee, and they're bought off by this, and they're bought. And so you sit there and go, how did a lower level conference commissioner agree to this? Well, because they don't want to be a lower level conference commissioner anymore.
Right. They want to be a high level conference commissioner.
When the people you're voting with control your future, that's how it goes bad. So credit to Rhodes. He went all in for Baylor, and I don't think you're going to see him work in the South.
A real quick question.
I think for that Baylor Texas game that you mentioned and the Baylor Oklahoma game this year, he should actually wear Bryce Petty's jersey, the great former Baylor quarterback. with Petty on the back.
There it is. Name, image, and likeness. Like name, yes, image, and likness possibilities.
Exactly. Yes.
Quick
if
question.
If he had worn that in the Texas Senate and then done the double thumbs on the back.
Did anyone do horns down in there? Anybody?
Probably not.
No politician's going to risk that. They're not going to risk that.
Quick question. When Joe Castiglione went like cartoonishly outraged about the 11 a.m. kickoff against Nebraska, don't you think that was to try to like lay some of the groundwork for this? Like, look how bad things are getting with this conference. We're playing this great game and it's at 11 a.m. I mean, Joe Castiglione, you guys know him. He tends to be one of the most diplomatic people around. And for him to all of a sudden go like nuclear mad about a kickoff time told me that, like, okay, I didn't understand it at the time. Now I think I understand it better, because it's trying to gin up this narrative of like, well, we're just not being treated well in this conference. We've got to look out for our best interests.
It's a ridiculous thing too. It's like, what, the 11? I mean, you get the big noon kickoff proved to be a ratings bonanza last year.
Right.
And I'm sorry, but you live in the Central Time Zone. You're going to get a national game. What, some of your boosters don't want to get up that early because they're drinking the night before? Like, what's the problem?
Like, you're trying to sell this game against Nebraska like it's a big deal. Nebraska sucks. So, sorry.
Pat's approval rating in Nebraska just got lower somehow, which is really hard for him to do.
blame Nebraska for this thing. If Nebraska was any good, it would have been at 7 o'clock at night, but it isn't.
Right. I think that was trumped up as a way to start laying the groundwork that we need to be in a league where we're treated better.
Maybe he likes a leisurely brunch and doesn't want to get rushed into his day. I don't know.
Maybe Pat's having a leisurely brunch while we talk. I'm actually sick of watching Pat eat rolls. I can't imagine Pat.
How many
Pat
rolls
is
you get
rolls
in that breakfast box this morning?
Get two
Pat.
Rolls for every breakfast. Two of them. Not one, but two.
No butter? You have little butter, Pat?
A very small amount of butter. Not enough butter to go around.
Here in Japan, we're limited on the restaurants. We're not allowed to go to them. So they give us a breakfast thing, a box of breakfast every morning at our hotels, which is, you never know.
You never know.
All sorts of things will show up in there.
Yes.
Whatever
this mystery substance is here that is not being eaten.
It looks like an almond.
Is that an empanada?
Oh, no.
It's definitely not empanada. It is probably an egg of some kind. Cold.
Well, open like it up. Let's see what you got. Open it up.
I'm not eating that thing.
Open it up.
That's where the cold chicken strips were in there with it. I ate the chicken. I left whatever that is.
Jeez, do it for the pod, man.
Small paperweight. No, I'm not doing that for the pod.
Small paperweight. All right. More news. And I guess ESPN sent this clip out. We have the Big 12 ESPN feud. Bob Bowlesby, of course, did the cease and desist. You're trying to destabilize the conference like you're like the United States messing with Ecuadorian politics. Destabilize Bowlesby. The ESPN yanked the chain on that one. And like, listen, it's like, don't fight with your banker. He can call that loan in anytime he wants, man.
Yeah. Bowlesby notably took no shots at ESPN in this year.
No, none. Bowlesby said, we have agreed to not escalate this publicly. Oh, publicly. It's in neither party's interest to do so. Remember we said ESPN does not like getting blamed for
they
these
do
things.
Not.
We have a clip. ESPN itself sent out, ESPN PR sent this out to try to make
They might
case.
As well have hired Rusty Harden the way they're acting.
Anybody affiliated with ESPN participate in any of those conversations?
That one I can tell you categorically absolutely is no.
Okay, and then laying aside those conversations we described about this path you were on, separate from that, how about communications between anyone at UT and anyone at ESPN on this topic, even close to this topic?
To my knowledge and direction, absolutely zero conversations between us or any of our representatives in ESPN or any network.
That other sound was Bob Bowlesby's eye roll in the background.
Oh, yeah.
This is like the Benghazi hearings. Not to my knowledge. Not sure. Oh, boy. All right. So ESPN is trying to say they're in the clear here.
No, they do not they are not taking any responsibility for funding the Sandinistas, destabilizing the government, organizing regime change.
No. They ought to know that in this era of social media that they have no chance. No. Right now, like Red Raider Fan 63 has uncovered a supposed text message between two cousins, and one of them works as cameraman, remote broadcasts. And he says that he heard. So that's your no shot. They're always going to blame ESPN. Good luck. Good luck, though. Good luck.
They've been so anxious to dispel this notion that they've brought more attention to it, which is hilarious. You would think they'd understand the basic tenet of publicity working at ESPN. But instead, they're like, no. I mean, should they hire Baez too, Dan, your guy from Hernandez? I mean, it's just like we get it. You denied it. And most people would go quietly into the night. They're going kicking and screaming. It's been an interesting strategy.
They'd win if they got Jose Baez.
Yeah.
That would be much. And then finally, we have TCU Chancellor Boschini going straight political. Mm. We're going to try to make the Big 12 great again. Purple red hats for the purple.
You know, in the state of Texas, at Texas Christian University, that probably played really well.
All right. So that's this week in how the Big 12 turns.
Can't wait for next week.
Yeah.
Keep it coming.
Keep it up.
Yeah.
We're going to get to Quinn Ewers, but let's get to this. The SEC is abuzz about how the hell they're going to handle 16 teams, same as the National Football Conference. 16 teams. It's not really a conference when you have this many teams. So what are you going to do? So scheduling wise, one option is four pods of four teams. Everybody plays each other. That leaves, presumably they'll go nine games. I mean, I don't know why would you stick at eight?
They ain't sticking at eight.
Yeah.
They can't. Yeah. It's do they go to 10?
They should go to 10.
Yes. Yes. And they may go to 10. One smart person told me that they'll aim for 10. And if they miss, they end at nine. There's zero chance of eight. They want to see each other more. They believe they are college football now. And they have the right publicity mechanism. Who's going to remind us of that? Over and over and over and over.
But the funny thing, and this again goes to the wildly shifting stances you get from people. I mean, for how many years did we listen to Greg Sankey, or even before him, Mike's Live, say, we don't need to play nine. We play eight in the toughest conference in America. Well, they're going to shift from that now, and it's going to be a totally different line.
Remember, Nick Saban wants to play more games. Right?
He does.
And yeah. Scott Strickland, the Florida athletic director, has led the charge of only Power Five.
Right.
Because they in Georgia have the unique home schedule dilemma that there are years where they have terrible home schedules. If you have Flotsam and Jetsam rolling in September and your home road splits go weird, you can have a bad, like Georgia has a bad home schedule this year. We've talked about that before.
Yeah,
so there's a thought that we're moving this way. And essentially, it's not a like what's best for our football team. It's like what's best for our consumers. And there's people in the Big 12 that'll tell you, or people at Texas and Oklahoma will tell you, they made this move because they want to have Florida, Georgia, Alabama rolling in the league schedule instead of Iowa State, K-State, and Kansas coming in their league schedule. Like that's just better for business. It's better for season ticket holders. It's better, you know, in a 30-year plan for buzz and publicity and such. So I'm not promising we'll end up at 10. But I think they're going to take a long look at it. And you can't overstate the reverberations for the rest of the sport if the SEC is only playing two out-of-conference games. It changes everything. Because then other leagues are going to be forced to go the same model, and there's going to be very little inter-conference play. Or is that intra? I always get those mixed up. Anyway.
Inter.
So if there's very little inter-conference play, it's going to create more, you know, the three loss SEC team versus the undefeated. I mean, it's just going to be a beautiful mess. But
yeah,
ten is real.
I mean, like, when everybody was bashing the SEC for only playing eight games, Greg Sankey's heels were dug in up to his knees on we're playing eight games because we're the best. And now all of a sudden that's going to just disappear because that's the way this stuff happens. Same as Bill Hancock. We don't need a playoff. Hey, guys, we got a playoff.
Enhance the regular season. Well, two things on this. One, the 10 games, Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina have built in, and Kentucky, to a, actually Louisville, I mean, to a slightly lesser degree. I guess Louisville certainly as good as Georgia Tech. Kentucky plays Louisville, Georgia plays Georgia Tech, Florida plays Florida State, South Carolina plays Clemson. Some of those games are literally legislatively, I think just like the law in Kentucky, don't they have to play?
Well, they made that law in basketball. I don't know whether the law is still on the books, and I don't know whether the ball has ever folded Kentucky. In.
Let's
never
just change. Take a step back. If you think Texas legislature is nuts, there is a law in the state of Kentucky, and there aren't a whole lot of laws in Kentucky, best I can tell.
The podcast will prove that with some of the stuff we talk about.
I will. I love that place, and one of them is their lack of laws. There is an actual law that Louisville and Kentucky have to play basketball every year. An actual law. Okay. That's how
Marshall,
crazy
West
this is.
Virginia, didn't that get litigious too? Didn't the governor force Marshall and West Virginia to play?
They don't play every year though.
No, they didn't for a while. West Virginia.
Right. No, they didn't play for a long time. They still don't. They go off and on, which makes me think there's not a law, but there was definitely
West Virginia is breaking.
There was legislative pressure for those two to play for sure.
Yes, there was legislative interference of some kind.
You want to get people pissed off? Go on Twitter and say that there's say something about the Marshall West Virginia rivalry, and then listen to the West Virginia fans. There's no rivalry. They're not our rival.
Randy Moss is the one.
We have
Randy
those age old rivals in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Those are our rivals.
That's right.
There's nothing better than when people in West Virginia are looking down on each other. Well, that school, come on. It's like, oh boy. All right. There's always something. Anyway, where was I? Anyway, so if you're those schools, you're down to one non-con game because you have a hard game. So you're down to basically those schools are completely out of playing non-conference games for the most part.
Pretty much.
This is just a problem. I mean, you should probably play 10 games, but man, like, if you ask Georgia fans what's one of their best moments of the last decade, it was the home-and-home with Notre Dame.
Yeah, one of the best Georgia moments fans, of the last 40 years.
Well, whatever. Yeah, 40. Okay. Also true. They loved going to Notre Dame. They loved having Notre Dame come. And you're Georgia. And, you know, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of them. LSU's going out to UCLA. I mean, you want to take your show on the road a little bit. And you want to give your fans that and you get the spice of just a little Georgia's playing Clemson, like, so that'd be gone. Can't play Clemson because you're in a league where you have to play Missouri more often. Yeah. I assure you the Georgia fans are extremely excited about playing Clemson.
Sure.
Oh, I mean, that game's gonna be awesome.
Gonna be awesome, and what you call it, whatever conference you want, but there's a whole bunch of Clemson fans in Georgia, so this is the game you want. You lose that, that sucks. It sucks for the sport, and it sucks at an individual level. And that's why I keep saying everyone's like, hey, this is great for the SEC. We're taking over the world. You're losing something, man.
Sure.
You're making more money that you aren't getting. And as a fan, you're going to lose something. And what you're going to lose is we don't get to ever play Clemson again. We don't ever get to go to Notre Dame. We don't ever just sit there and say, hey, let's schedule USC. Hey, let's do whatever we're going to do. Let's get one going with Ohio State. We're not going to be able to bring fans from the other parts of the country in to see our stadiums, which they have so much pride in, all of that. Gone. Sucks. That sucks.
That's a really good point that's been, I think, completely overlooked in this. But that, yes, if you go to 10, because you know, all right, so you're going to keep Georgia Tech, that extra game is A, going to be a home game every year, and B, it's going to be, you know, Troy or...
So to go in the weeds, because that's my job here, if they do go 10, and maybe even if they go 9 in the SEC, look for a big push from the SEC have-nots to wipe away the 6-game bowl minimum, which is really just kind of like a made-up thing anyway, because they're going to be beating each other up in the SEC. And if they're beating each other up, they're our 5-7 team's better than your 8-4 team. So, and look, like, who would object to this? Well, the Bulls. Who owns the Bulls? ESPN. So you think ESPN's going to object to taking 5-7 Kentucky over 8-4 Western Kentucky? Ain't no chance. Now, so that decision goes to the competition committee and the football oversight committee. Those are two different committees would determine something like this. But don't be surprised if there's a little bit of pressure from their media friends to wipe that out. I guess you can be 5-7 now if you have the right APR. But I would just think as we go on that, again, who cares, right? Bowl standards, bowl minimums. For the Meineke Bowl, for the glory of the Meineke Bowl, you must be 6-6, right? But I just do feel like as SEC world domination, ESPN world domination continues, that's something else that could slide by the wayside.
I'm looking at this Georgia schedule. God, good on you, Georgia, with these future schedules.
Oh, yeah, they're getting after it. They're getting after it. Yeah, yeah.
They got Oklahoma. They had Oklahoma coming up. They actually have an at 28. They have an at Texas. They have Oregon in Atlanta. They have Clemson in Atlanta. They have a home and home with UCLA. They have a home and home with Louisville. Like, one year they're playing UCLA and at Louisville. They have a home and home with Florida State. They have a home and home coming with Texas, which, you know, I guess will just be folded in. I mean, that to me is what you want out of, you know, like, look at this I mean, it's 2029, who knows, but their three non-conference games are Texas at Clemson, Georgia Tech at Georgia Tech. Like, that's
phenomenal.
It's phenomenal. And that's gone. Now, I guess you'll play Texas less now than you would if you just scheduled them.
Yeah.
But it's the at UCLA trip, the Florida State game. I mean, that's a tremendous game.
Yeah.
Like, people in South Georgia, that is
huge.
I mean, you're going crazy for that thing. And it's gone. And that, it's just not good for college football. It's not good for Georgia. If you want to play Oklahoma and Texas, guess what you do? You schedule them like you did.
Right.
And you don't have to give up the other stuff. So 10 is going to be dicey. That's probably why you go to nine.
Sully's like, we don't need 10. We've got 5 years of rebuilding. We don't need 10
Sully,
at Tennessee.
Sully doesn't want the pods. He doesn't like the pods.
I hate the pods. I want three teams.
Why, Sully?
I want three teams, three permanent teams. I want to play more people.
So okay.
Three permanent teams and then six rotating that you could reseed, and you could put in a rule like you can't play XYZ so many straight years. So like Alabama doesn't get matched up with Vanderbilt, you know, every year or whatever. And you just reseed it and have this rescheduling TV extravaganza like they had last year in 2020. It was such a big event. It gives you another event. You could do it around SEC Media Days and you release the schedule. It'd be awesome.
I have nothing against that except my one thing that I have always had at least a mild affinity for divisions because I think people get excited about whether they can win a division. Right. And so if you take that away, I mean, I guess, can you win a pod or does it even matter whether you win a pod or is it just kind of what your record is? And you, at the end, they just are going to take the two highest ranked teams in the conference.
Right. Yeah. Nobody really cares.
Right. But like when Missouri won the SEC East, it was a big damn deal for Missouri. And in years when like South Carolina won in 2010, that was a big deal for South Carolina. I would bet without knowing for sure that you could go to South Carolina's facilities and find multiple mentions of SEC East champion there. And you're going to take that away. And, you know, for some schools, that's one less thing to shoot for.
All right, let's get to this somewhat briefly, and we'll talk about it more. We talked about it on a past podcast if you're looking for more discussion. But Quinn Ewers, essentially the number one recruit in the class of 2022, has reclassified. Skip is leaving early. They're saying Skip is senior year, but whatever. He's not playing an extra year of high school football. We see this in basketball. He is headed to Ohio State. I don't know whether he really has seven figures worth of endorsement deals waiting for him or not, but that's what they're claiming, maybe. And he is going to join the Buckeyes. Now, a couple things we talked about before. Do you see this as a possible trend and a trend in recruiting the way it works in basketball, where all of a sudden guys just sit there and say, I'm committed, and then all of a sudden I'm in on this class? And then what does this mean for the Buckeyes this year? How good is this kid, and can he just show up without that gray shirt? It's not the gray shirt. What do they call it when they go early? Blue shirt.
Blue shirt's a different thing.
It's got to have a name. It's got to have a name.
It doesn't have to have a name. He's in for spring, and you get a spring practice. It's an early enrollee.
Early enrollee. Yeah, that's...
T, what are your thoughts on this? Those two.
I'll take the the timeline and the player part of this first, because I know Ohio State fans are very concerned with Quinn Ewers and whether he will be a factor in the Buckeye quarterback race. He has a core English class to finish online, and he also has...
Was it the Mice and Men? Has he got his paper? Where, Pete, give it. How far is he on his term paper? This is some really good reporting. Sources. And he just finished chapter 8.
There's another. Yeah, I went down the Ewers rabbit hole pretty deep the last couple of days here. So there's another minor academic thing that has to be taken care of. I would imagine he gets to Columbus sometime in the next 2 weeks, maybe. So he is not a factor to start in game one. That is completely unrealistic. He doesn't know a single formation. Allegedly, the offense at South Lake Carroll, which I've yet to study, is similar to what they run at Ohio State, but it's not that similar. He doesn't even know his teammates' names. So I think from Ewers' perspective, he goes a year early, gets to develop under Ryan Day, gets to learn the offense, all those things go. If there's a confluence of things that happen, including him being a super quick study, I think he's got to impress Mickey Marotti in the weight room. I think that's a big part of any kind of Ohio State player earning valuable playing time, is sort of passing that litmus test. Marotti's obviously the longtime strength coach for Urban Meyer at Florida and beyond. He's considered one of the best guys at that job in the country. And so, you know, could he get on the field at some point in October? Sure. But I think Ohio State's good enough this year, especially with the receivers that they have and the O-line that they have. And they have a pretty good stable of backs where, you know, Dan could play quarterback for him, and they're probably going to be okay. But, you know, he will not be a factor. Opener will not be a factor, or, you know, going in there. And then eventually he could factor in, but it's a ways from the thought process right now for where things are. But it's certainly interesting. People have been skeptical of the seven figures, like Pat said, just from talking to his family and people around him. I certainly don't have receipts, but there's optimism that it gets close to that. And we reported nearly seven figures, including equity in a company, which is like an entirely different deal than just like cutting a $500,000 deal. Like if you get equity in a company, that's obviously going to grow. So that makes it a little bit nebulous. But the holy kombucha factor here, Pat, I know you're a big kombucha fan, should not be underestimated. There's been national commercial interest, which is real, and then a ton of memorabilia. He's a little bit of a perfect marketing storm with the mullet in Texas and colliding with Ohio State. I mean, those are two of the bigger football brands you can have. So he will be an interesting.
He'll make $1 million. I don't doubt that.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I'm not worried about the Ewers family.
Yeah. No, they're going to be okay. They're going to be all right. Okay. They're going to be all right.
There was a lot of blowback during the Olympics on Simone Biles, and one of the notes or texts, something I got was like, you know, after she failed to, you know, compete in all the things, that someone was worried about her future. I was like,
yeah, right. Her future's okay.
Simone's going to be okay there.
Yeah.
Fella, you'll be all right.
I'll reiterate my point from the other day. I'm not worried about Quinn Ewers' future. I'm worried about his present. I mean, I hope this is his idea and he's on board with it, because I don't love the idea of plucking somebody out of their senior year of high school and saying, never mind, go get money. And again, if he wants to do it, right on. Senior year of high school is a pretty awesome year in your life. And, you hate to see somebody that's just not going to have that. But again, if he doesn't want it, no big deal.
Yeah,
I'm with you. Of age to be a freshman in college. So
right. Yeah,
physical development, all that stuff. But I get it. Look,
but these are his classmates and his peers that he's been with for however many years, depending when they redshirted him, quote unquote redshirted.
He's like, like McConaughey in Dazed and Confused. I mean, the guy's kind of old for high school. No, I don't know. I'm with you. I wouldn't do it, but I respect anyone's. You want to go make a living, go make a living. It's not like he's, we got guys enrolling in the, not that you're suggesting this, but you know, you can enroll in the Marines, you can go to Ohio State football. He'll be all right. He'll be all
right. He's not taking on a bad gig by any stretch.
A huge deal. My biggest thing is just the do you get thrown? Quarterbacks get ruined.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen a million. It's just a dicey thing. It's not just like this
Right.
It's just a million things can go wrong. One thing can go right when it comes to development of a quarterback.
Yeah.
And we've seen that forever. All right.
Yeah, there's four-star or five-star underclassmen quarterbacks in the Ohio State quarterback room right
now. Yeah.
Jack Miller, C.J. Stroud, Kyle McCord, Quinn Ewers. So the safe prediction is they're all not probably going to be there to get their degrees. now, the sell, of course, at Ohio State has come develop. Look at Joe Burrow. He developed for 3 years. Now, some of that was Tim Beck. Some of that was Ryan Day as a quarterback coach. Like, that's the we'll develop you for the NFL best. And they'll point to Dwayne Haskins, get it being a first-round pick. And they'll obviously point to Justin Fields. It will be interesting to see how much of that pitch is bought by the young men who are there to develop.
Yeah. Like, I would try trust Ryan Day in a situation like this because, A, as Pete said, he's got other guys. Like, he can put Quinn Ewers in the, in case of emergency, break glass category. Like, if we're terrible and all these other guys aren't performing or somebody gets hurt and we need to try something, we'll throw him in there in October or whatever. But I don't, I would think he would not necessarily rush him into a situation he's not prepared for. But also, to Dan's point, is if this guy has been the guy his whole life and all of a sudden things start going wrong, whether it's even just in practice, you're fourth string and you're not accustomed to being fourth string and you start losing confidence at that position, that can be difficult.
From the Ohio State standpoint, the family made it very clear to me, like, Ryan Day wasn't trying to pluck him from South Lake Carroll. Like, they have a good quarterback cluster there. I think it's just generally in the family's belief for his development as a business decision, not like a name, image, and likeness business decision, but for developing as a quarterback, he's better off getting there earlier and going through that development. But there was no intimation by anyone involved on the Ewers side that, oh, Ryan had no faith in the guys he has, and they're going to, like, bring him to rescue the Buckeyes. That notion never arose.
Spending a year as a red shirt is a good idea. So if that's what it ends up essentially being, whether officially red shirts or not, it's never really a bad thing. All right, that's our pod. Please, our traffic is up significantly. Obviously, we got a lot going on. We're rolling into the season. Continue to share us on social media. Positive reviews, please. If you can review us and subscribe and all of that. Things are just heating up. We have a lot of fun with it, even if it's some tense times for some of you out there. We're going to be back. Pat and I will be back stateside.
Yeah, the next time you hear from us, we'll all be on the same time zone, and I won't be eating Japanese rolls.
My lawn will be properly mowed.
You're a few tired drink cart workers between Japan and your homes in America.
Sobriety train ends. Last stop. Delta flight, whatever. Talk to you all later.